Duke Ellington's Wanderlust, with solos from Ray Nance trumpet, Johnny Hodges alto, Coleman Hawkins tenor and Harry Carney baritone. And that's it from Jazz Record Requests for this week. I'll be back at the usual time next Saturday, but now here on BBC Radio 3 it's time for Jazz Lineup with Julian Joseph and Claire Martin.
Hello. On today's programme, I'll be revisiting some of the highlights from the very first BBC Young Musician Jazz Award, which aired on TV last night on BBC 4 as part of this month's BBC Jazz season. The finals took place in Cardiff on the 10th of March at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama, and the crowned winner was 17-year-old alto saxophonist Alexander Bone, who competed against a very worthy bunch of finalists, all of whom we'll hear later on in the show. I'll also be joined by my Jazz Lineup colleague, Julian Joseph, who is on the judging panel. And together we'll be reflecting on the competition and also spinning music from some of the UK's most exciting emerging jazz artists on the scene today. Well, before that, let's get straight to the music and have a listen to the playing of Alexander Bone, the very first winner of the BBC Young Musician Jazz Award. Let's hear Alex with his interpretation of My Funny Valentine.
Thank you.
Alexander Bohm with the Gwilym Simcock Trio, beautifully accompanying him on Rodgers and Hart's classic My Funny Valentine. And Alexander was the winner of the very first BBC Young Musician Jazz Award. Pianist, composer and fellow jazz lineup presenter Julian Joseph was one of the adjudicators for the event, and I'm pleased to say he's joined me in the studio. Hello, Julian.
Hi, Claire. It's lovely to be here.
What was it for you that was so special about Alexander's playing that night? I know it was a difficult decision to make and apparently you all agonised, but what was it about him?
Well, I think his interpretation of My Funny Valentine, which we just heard, was the decider, really. He played it with a great sense of love, a sense of familiarity, like he had a proper relationship with the tune and the music. In terms of the level of all of them, any one of them could have won. And I think in our adjudication, each person actually did win.
Yeah.
And then we had to finally come to a decision. And I think, in a funny sense, Alexander either sat in the middle or was an extreme version of what each of them had.
Right.
So he encapsulated the spirit of the competition and the competitors of the time.
But this is the first time in history that the BBC Young Musician of the Year competition was opened up to jazz. Previously, it's been a platform reserved only for classical music, in fact, for 36 years, you know. It's been a long time coming, this, isn't it?
It's been a long time coming, but as you know, Claire, jazz is a very difficult music to pin down, and especially because our tradition of education in jazz is relatively new, I'd say 20, pushing 30 years old in an established way. So judging jazz in a competition, I don't know. It takes some work, and even now it's a start, but there's going to be a lot of discussion, a lot of changing and a lot of evolving to really have a competition that's representative. Because we're all going to watch it and say, well, you know, how can you judge that? Or I preferred that guy,
sure.
I preferred that guy.
Sure.
And in a sense, in the classical arena, it's probably quite a bit easier to assess the beginning levels than getting up to the highest level of the competition, because you've got technical aspects, you've got a certain kind of perfection, you've got sensitivity to the interpretation.
Sure.
And then at the top level, it's about who you like the best, who's communicating the best. And I think with jazz, we jump to that really quickly, and sometimes some of those other levels get left out.
Sure, and of course they're playing a set piece, and we're talking about improvisation, which is up for grabs, isn't it, as well?
And they're all playing different pieces. All the jazz guys are playing different pieces. So it's very difficult to
Well, the house band for the competition, they provided such support and encouragement. I thought Gwilym spoke beautifully as well, and it was really encouraging on the night. Quite an inspired choice to ask Gwilym, especially because he'd be so sympathetic to that competition arena because of his upbringing, you know, doing classical music. But I don't know how I feel about competition in music. Is it, you know, it's a big question, but...
That's a good question, because is it healthy? Yes, it's healthy to be competitive. Does it really say whether a jazz musician is going to be successful? Well, we don't have that tradition, really. We have the Thelonious Monk competition. In a similar sense, one of the only people who've really flowered from that competition is Joshua Redman. And Joshua Redman has a whole lineage that adds to him winning.
Yeah.
And for anybody else, what difference does it make? I know Harry Connick came third in the piano competition in Jacksonville when he was 15, but, you know, it has very little to do with his career. So I think competition's probably good for the competitor, because it focuses the competitor and gets them to think about certain aspects of their playing. And it's probably good to put yourself through that gauntlet, in a way, that pressure and all of that.
Yeah, it's character building, isn't it?
I mean, as you can see, just our discussion here is questioning the idea of competition. What is positive is that the BBC have started acknowledging the presence of jazz in this major competition that has been so helpful and fruitful for many classical musicians.
Yes, good point.
And if that can help in jazz, then we certainly welcome it.
just about to come on to who else judged with you. Trish Clues, great composer, saxophonist. Jason Yard again, saxophone. Yeah. Django Bates.
The brilliant Django Bates, yeah. Absolutely amazing person to spend time with. All of them, actually. And
that was it? Was it just you
that
four?
That was just the four of us. Yeah. Of course, we all know each other to varying degrees and varying levels and all have quite different opinions and different outlooks on the music. But what was wonderful was that it was quite easy to create a consensus between us because our sense of criteria matched. And I think that's really what matters.
Well, let's continue with one of the other finalists, and this is 14-year-old bassist Freddie Jensen playing an original piece called 5 Hours Ahead. I thought it was really great that 14, he's writing his own very accomplished piece. What did you like so much about this, Julian?
Well, I loved the fact that he wrote it in 5/4, and it just wasn't an obvious 5/4. And I loved the interplay, the way he used the rhythm section, the way Guillaume executed the melody. But he's so young, he still needs to develop a sound on the instrument. And it's a completely different conception from playing the cello, which he also plays. So we all appreciated the strength, his sense of feel, and his firm rhythmic center.
Let's hear him, Freddie Jensen, playing 5 Hours Ahead. Bassist Freddie Jensen, who was one of the five finalists in the BBC Young Musician Jazz Award competition, and he was playing 5 hours ahead his own composition with the Gwilym Simcock Trio. So, Julian, not all of the best players are necessarily coming out of conservatoires. Do you agree? I mean, it is still possible to learn on the job, you know. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, I think the reason for conservatoires is because the whole tradition and mentoring that you got playing in clubs when you were too young, it doesn't exist as much now. It's not part of the culture of jazz as much, which is a shame. So, yes, I think ultimately you want somebody to come out that doesn't sound school-trained, if you like.
Mm.
But I don't even know what school-trained means, because sometimes you'd describe a school-trained jazz artist as somebody who's quite predictable, has got a certain amount of things together and you don't really feel it. And the person who's come up on the street, so to speak, has got the soul and the feeling and the edge and all the things you look for in great jazz.
Mm.
So the creation of education, you know, for many years I was actually quite just a bit tentative about it all. And it's become almost bigger than the music in itself. And that was what I was so tentative about. The money that's put aside for education, as opposed to the music, just far outweighed it. And what's also become a regular feature of both a classical musician's life and a jazz musician's life is that there has to be some kind of educational portion to it. Now, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to mentor youngsters.
Sometimes it's a necessity. I don't know anyone that's making a living purely from playing jazz, really. I mean, everyone's got an educational aspect to their career, haven't they?
And this is what I'm saying, because there are many parts that make up a career, be it doing radio, presenting television, doing your gigs, being a composer. There are all of these aspects, and education has become one of the biggest aspects. And what my worry for many years was that the educational side of jazz was almost bigger than jazz itself.
Yeah.
And that was a worry. But when you see kids like this coming through, I'm very happy about it, because what was great was there was a lot of support, not only from their teachers, but from their fellow students. So many of the kids were bussed in from, whether it was the Purcell School or Cheatham's, so on and so forth. So it was lovely to see a congregation of such young people there supporting each other. And that in itself is a new culture.
Yeah. So, Julian, a bit of a bugbear for me, really, but we can't escape from talking about this. There was a healthy mix of boys and girls in the classical competition, but not one girl in the final. I don't know how many girls even applied for this. Let's discuss this, because it's boy-heavy here. What's going on?
Well, I mean, the music is boy-heavy anyway, all right? So, I mean, this is actually a good discussion for you and I, because I think over the years, it's been wonderful to see more and more women coming into the music. I mean, Trish was there as a judge, but I don't know how filled it is with lots of women, because it is a very male-dominated industry.
Mm.
I think it's going to have to always be about who can really play and who's going to be coming through. Mm. So I hope that in the next competition we see more girls
absolutely
coming through.
I mean, and Trish would be a great role model for women, you know, seeing her there.
Yeah.
But there aren't any role models. There aren't, at grassroots level, music lessons are being cut. Forget about what start, it's cut from the educational curriculum. So to then say, oh, introduce girls to saxophones and to tell them about jazz, it's wish upon a wish there. I mean, we've got that music's being taken away from children. So I'm concerned that they're not getting any music education, let alone jazz. But you can't help but notice that there's not one woman in this. I mean, it's such a shame, and it just doesn't make sense to me. Listen, the inspirational saxophonist Trish Clues was on the panel of judges, and I'm sure she's hoping, as we all are, that next year is a very different story. But let's redress the balance by reassuring everyone that there are lots of incredibly gifted female jazz musicians on the scene who are making a real name for themselves in this very male-dominated genre. Whirlwind Records are certainly doing their bit to celebrate two amazing British female saxophonists, Rachel Cohen, who recently released her debut CD, Half Time, and Tori Freestone, the jazz folk saxophonist who last month received a 4-star review in The Guardian from jazz critic John Fordham for her new release called In the Chop House. Julian, are you familiar with Tori's playing?
I certainly am. I believe I've played some of her music on this very show.
Very good. Well, she's gone for a quite really brave format. It's a trio format, no chordal instrument. Let's hear her with Lonesome George.
Thank you.
with Dave Mannington on bass and Tim Giles on drums. That was saxophonist Tori Freestone with Lonesome George, taken from her new release on the Whirlwind label called In the Chop House. Well, now let's go back to the highlights from the finals of the first ever BBC Young Musician Jazz Award competition. Another finalist who took place was trumpeter Jake Labatzi. Julian, you were particularly impressed with his take on a Charlie Parker tune. Tell us about that.
Yes, he played Charlie Parker's variation on the Rhythm Changes composition, Anthropology. And I think what was impressive about Jake was that he took it at a very sprightly tempo.
You do when you're that young.
And he executed it beautifully. There was a great sense of sculpting and carving the changes. And I think both Jake and Sean had the greatest sense of melody in their soloing. There was this sense of really understanding the changes, understanding the way melody plays in logically through the music. And that really impressed me, and particularly on a trumpet with somebody so young. He's playing at a level way beyond his years.
Let's hear Jake with Anthropology. Thank you. Trumpeter Jake Labatsy with his take on the Charlie Parker Classic Anthropology, and I'm joined by Julian Joseph to talk more about the BBC's Young Musician Jazz Award. So, Julian, we touched on it, but do you think that the competition in music, you know, is it a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, it will ignite a spark to encourage young players to enter next time. And, of course, you're going to be on telly, which is rare, jazz on TV. So there are some really good things from this.
Well, competition. Young people often like hearing young people in recordings. Mm. When they see each other competing, there is a sense of competition amongst the young anyway. When you hear someone who's really good early and you're young and about the same age, you're like, how old are you? And there's always this, if you just watch kids, they're always measuring each other and seeing, well, if I get that before I'm 12 or if I do that before I'm 14, then, you know, that's what I need to do. And they measure everything by their ages. And so there's this natural sense of competition that goes on. And I don't think it hurts at this young age for them to compete. I don't think it's there's a problem in terms of pressure, because you need to learn how to deal with pressure. You need to get a sense of how your peers are sounding, because we do it all the time and it doesn't stop. You need to get a sense of what the elements are that make a good player. Then you also have to transcend that. You have to transcend that and get into that arena that is about how does it sound and do I move somebody? Can I even move myself?
I can't believe they're thinking about that this young age. I mean, that is so, it's so mature, isn't it? And they all spoke so beautifully. The way they introduced the tunes and the way they articulated and little funny little jokes they did. And I mean, it was so endearing and it was so slick, I thought. No one sounded like they were stumbling on their words.
Well, Jake was the only one who didn't say anything. And I think, you know, whether he said something or he didn't, it didn't matter. And it certainly didn't matter to us judges. I mean, one more point about Jake, actually, was that he had this Kenny Wheeler influence. He was hugely influenced by Kenny Wheeler. So he had that both that cross-section of being able to play through the bebop language and make it make sense. And he had this mature approach that came from a glorious influence, the legend that is Kenny Wheeler. And I think that really moved all of us. That really touched us, because it is an apprenticeship, this music. You work with people and they hand it down. Sometimes you don't even work with them, you listen to them and they hand down what they have, and you want to pick up some of that.
We talked earlier about there was no young women in this final, sadly, but there also wasn't any black or Asian players. It seemed it was a real white male thing. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that's also another aspect that's trying to be addressed, to attract more young people of colour into the music, to grab hold of a tradition that is very inclusive. And that comes from the African-American experience. It was born of that and out of a combination of great elements coming together. But somewhere along the line, it's got lost, because in popular music, different styles subsume the history. And it's very important for us not to just get caught up in what's present. And I think that's what's so valuable about jazz, the great musics, whether it's folk musics of any style, or jazz music or classical music. It makes you think outside of time. It makes you think outside of fashion. And it also makes you incorporate things that are contemporary, but it also makes you not look at just the limited time frame that we live in.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, I think we're working hard to attract more black people in particular, and Asian people,
to come to gigs and enjoy.
To engage in the music, also to learn to play instruments. And there are those out there. I have many young black kids and Asian kids in my school, but it's going to take a few years for it to start coming through. It also needs to happen in classical music. There's not enough. And it's a shame. It's a terrible shame. But it's about access, and it's about support, and it's about visibility, and it's about understanding history. It's about many, many elements, which we've spoken about before and which we will go on speaking about. But hopefully we're just going to get out there, grab these kids, get them into it.
Get them engaged.
Oh, you know, I think it's about what looks attractive to young people, because in a sense, and I'm sure you feel this way, you can look at some of the jazz today that you may see or may not see, and you'll be like, well, why would I even be into jazz? When we were growing up, we saw Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan, and you know, they were still famous. They had been famous for many years, many decades. But you don't see that. And to get blown away by the Count Basie Orchestra, or you know,
Art Blakey or something.
Art Blakey or Duke Ellington. Yeah.
Yep. You need to see it.
If you see it, you'll get into it. But if you don't see it, why would you?
Mm.
If all you see is JC and Beyonce. Bless them. I mean, I love those guys, but you know what I'm saying. There's more than that.
Well, let's move away from the BBC Young Musician Jazz Award for a moment and turn to yet another gifted young British player who's one of the new emerging artists around at the moment. It's pianist Peter Edwards, who graduated with a master's from Trinity College in 2009 and has a growing reputation as an impressive bandleader, musical director, composer and arranger. His trio won a development award from the Musicians Benevolent Fund and has just released his debut CD entitled Safe and Sound. Let's hear the track that really caught my ear, and it's called Playtime. taken from his debut CD called Safe and Sound. That was the rising piano star Peter Edwards with his trio, and that was his own composition, Playtime. Peter was joined by bassist Max Luthert and Moses Boyd on the drums. But let's bring back the focus to highlights from the final of the BBC Young Musician Jazz Award. Well, let's hear some more music from the winner, Alexander Bone, and here he is with The Glide.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The Glide, played by Alexander Bone, the first winner of the BBC Young Musician Jazz Award. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. And I'm joined by my fellow Jazz Lineup presenter and pianist, Julian Joseph, who is chairing the judges on the competition night. With Julian, another finalist now, and this time it's alto saxophonist Tom Smith. He's 18. What did you think about his performance, in particular his take on Michael Brecker's Delta City Blues, which we're about to hear? Brave choice?
Brave choice. I think Tom's thing, in a way, was really reaching out to the crowd. He projected a sense of buoyancy and energy to the crowd. I spoke to him. We all spoke to each of the competitors afterwards, the musicians, and one of the things I said to Tom was that there is this general sense of shape that he brings and intensity, but when you go into the detail of the poetry of his line and how solid these lines are, he needs to really develop the work on that. And there's a lot of potential there, a lot of good energy. It was bright, and he was definitely the crowd's favourite. He was the big crowd pleaser.
Well, let's hear him with his take on Michael Brecker's Delta City Blues. It's Tom Smith.
Thank you.
saxophone, John Smith.
One of the finalists in the BBC Young Musician Jazz Award competition in action there, and it was alto saxophonist Tom Smith, who already gigs around London with his band. Mm. And this September, he starts his studies at the Royal Academy of Music, so yeah. Good luck to him. You're listening to Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, and we're enjoying the highlights of the final at this year's BBC Young Musician competition held at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama. You may have enjoyed watching the competition on BBC Four last night. With Julian, our winner tonight, saxophonist Alexander Boner. He's been playing the sax for 11 years. Did you start playing at a young age? And do you think there's an optimum age bracket for starting to learn a musical instrument?
Well, I did start young, but I've known many musicians who've started relatively late.
What's late? What's young?
Relatively late. I mean, started playing jazz from, say, about 17.
Yeah.
Is considered late, but I've heard many people who, and that seems to be the age many people actually do get into it, or did get into it, and they sound amazing. They sound brilliant beyond you anything you can imagine. So, I don't know. I think every aspect of learning is about passion. If you have a passion for learning, and particularly music, then that passion will carry you through.
And do you think, like I do, that some people are just born natural musicians. Some people are just born with it. They've got it. You can learn things,
yes.
But you can sometimes just see the music pouring out of some people,
well,
can't you?
Well, we've been around long enough to just look at somebody, hear them and say,
that's
yeah.
it.
They're full of the music.
Yeah, full of it. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's great, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's very obvious. So, yes, I do believe there are those. And I think when you analyse it, there are probably things that stick out that make that true.
Mm.
I think a natural musician, in inverted commas, is a person who has a propensity to enjoy the things that make them better.
Mm. Mm. Very good. And lots of proud mums and dads.
There's just a glow in the parents' eyes. And there is this great attachment to seeing a child of yours really loving the thing that you love.
Mm.
And so having that to share with any parent or any child is a really valuable thing. And it was great to behold that. And it was a heavy responsibility for myself, Django, Trish and Jason.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We hopefully just tried to honour it as best as we could. And I think that I was asked, you know, oh, what do you think of these guys? And, you know, aren't they amazing? And the thing is that it's actually more about potential. We're all looking at them and we're thinking their potential is immense.
Mm.
And if you think of somebody like Sean, 13 years old, already a poet on his instrument.
Mm.
Sometimes in the higher register, it was, you know, there was some intonation problems. But he's going to sort that out. No, but he's going to sort that out. He's 13 years old.
Yeah.
He's actually supposed to have intonation problems.
Yes.
As is Freddie.
All of them, really.
As is Freddie.
Yeah.
And Freddie, you know, he's the transition between cello to bass. He's still got to broaden his bass sound.
Mm.
So there are so many things they're there to work on. And Django could tell them many, many things. Trish could tell them many, many things. Mm. Jason could tell them many, many things. And that was the environment.
Yeah, brilliant. How fantastic. Well, another exciting young musician who caught my ear, and also that of music legend Quincy Jones, back in 2009 when he first heard him play at the same venue as these awards being held, the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama, is drummer Ollie Howell. Ollie is also a composer and a band leader, and this year is the proud receiver of a Sky Academy Arts Scholarship. Let's hear him with Dear Old Stockholm.
Thank you.
That was drummer Ollie Howell with Dear Old Stockholm, taken from his CD, Sutures and Stitches. And Ollie was joined by Duncan Eagles on tenor saxophone, Mark Perry on trumpet, Matt Robinson on piano and Max Lufert on double bass. And you can hear Ollie at this year's second Love Supreme Festival at Glyne Place in Sussex, and he's playing on the 5th of July. Let's go back to highlights from the final of the BBC Young Musician Jazz Award, and I'm enjoying the music with jazz lineup presenter and celebrated pianist Julian Joseph, who chaired the judges on the night of that final, which took place at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama. Well, before we listen to the final musician who took part in the inaugural award, that's saxophonist Sean Payne. He's 13. Tell us about his playing. He's the youngest finalist, good on him, and I've got a daughter who's nearly 12, and you know, I know how many hours I've tried to get her to practice. I mean, I find that mind-blowing, actually.
Yeah, he's just one of those dedicated people who really loves the music. He's a very sweet person. He's incredibly intelligent. one of the impressive things that made us all chuckle was that he said, I was reharmonizing a standard called Just Friends. I was reharmonizing.
Aren't you supposed to be playing football or something?
at 13 years
Fantastic.
Old. And I think all of his solos just have great sense of focus. And he's not just playing anything and being flashy. He's very thoughtful about it. He and Jake had this special attachment to melody, and which I think is one of the great features of this music.
Mm.
And it means that they're really checking out how the music functions.
Sure.
And how it operates on an atomic level.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, let's hear his original composition. And this is called Last Summer. It's Sean Payne. That was saxophonist Sean Payne, who was a finalist in the BBC Young Musician Jazz Award, and that was his own composition called Last Summer. We're now to another debut that's been called a minor masterpiece by London Jazz News. Scottish saxophonist Brian Molly has produced his first recording as a leader with 8 original compositions, and the album's entitled Clock. Likened to fellow Scott Bobby Wellens for never wasting a note, this is a classy and well-crafted debut. And this is Cara e Cruz. Featuring Tom Gibbs on piano, Mario Caribe on bass and Stuart Brown on drums. That was Cara e Cruz by saxophonist Brian Molly, taken from his debut release called Clock. But Julian, finally, what's your opinion on the young jazz scene here in the UK? I appreciate that you don't go out all the time listening to young players, and I don't either, but you talk about being in education and you've got your ear to the ground, you know what's going on. Are you heartened with what's going on at the moment?
I am. There's a great enthusiasm amongst the young players just to try and get better, just to get out there and live their dream, which is to play jazz. And we touched on it earlier. Sometimes I think, what is it that inspires young people to play jazz?
Yeah.
In a market and in a situation where you don't see much.
Mm.
We're very fortunate right now because we're bang right in the middle of BBC jazz season. But how often does that happen? Mm. And let's hope we get the jazz season a little more or a little longer.
Yeah. Yeah, we could have things like sort of jazz summers, couldn't we? The whole of the summer.
Yes.
That would be very
nice.
But what worries me is that they come out of these conservatoires or learners, they go really accomplished, thoughtful, intelligent musicians, really going to go for it. Where to play? Where do these youngsters play in a country that's lacking in venues, I think? And also, I've heard other musicians gripe about younger players coming out and playing for next to nothing and or nothing at clubs to sort of cut their teeth to gain experience, and thus making it impossible for established musicians to get a decent feel, get that gig again. I've seen that argument happen quite a few times. You know, youngsters going in want to go for it. What do you think about that?
Well, I think they'll find their way, because every new generation does. I also think it's our responsibility to be champions for them, and to try and find places for them to play and find situations for them to play.
What do you mean by that? Actually,
just be more proactive in encouraging them to either support us on gigs or create situations.
Or going into places and say, can I put some jazz on here?
Yeah.
Like going into wine bars, restaurants and creating the gig.
Well, and there are people who are doing that. And the people that we know, because having been in the business a long time, we probably know every single person who puts on a jazz gig.
Mm.
And it's, how hard is it to pick up the phone and say, hey, guys, there's this great saxophone player. Mm. You need to give him a gig. You know, or it would be, I have an idea for a young jazz musicians festival. Can you put
it
on?
That's a good idea.
So I think we have to think of ways to allow them to come through, because unless we do that, how's it going to happen?
Mm.
Who's going to have the jazz consciousness that's required to create an environment where they can thrive?
No, good point. And finally, what do you think, if anything, was actually, apart from singers, was missing from the competition this year?
Well, I think if there is a singing aspect, then it has to be solely singing.
Okay.
I think that would be good.
All right, yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think that would be a really good aspect. They don't have a singing portion to the BBC Young Musician.
Maybe they could combine the two.
Well, yeah, they could have, and maybe that's an opportunity for the whole competition to grow even more, bringing this jazz aspect, and now they can introduce a jazz vocal aspect and a classical vocal aspect, which I think would be really informative, and would provide an opportunity for the many myriad young musicians out there, and I think it'd probably be female heavy.
Yeah. But on the whole, it sounds like it was a great night.
It's a very positive step in our whole jazz universe. And I think that it's the first of many. And we have an opportunity to refine, improve and inspire.
Yeah, and expand it. Thank you, Julian Joseph.
Thank you, Claire Martin.
Remember, you can listen to this programme again on the BBC iPlayer, and if you want to watch the finals of the very first BBC Young Musician Jazz Award, if you missed it on television last night, that's still available too on iPlayer. And my thanks to Julian Joseph for sharing his insights on today's show. Well, there's plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Jez Nelson on Monday nights at 11. This week, Jez has music from Norwegian drummer Thomas Stronen with his new project, Time is a Blind Guide. And on next week's jazz lineup, concert music from the Danish Radio Big Band with special guest soloist American vocalist Curtis Stigers. Well, let's finish off with another track from the very first BBC Young Musician Jazz Award winner, alto saxophonist Alexander Bone. And this time it's his own composition, Messed Up Shape. For me, Claire Martin, until next time, bye-bye.
Alexander Bowen.
That was the BBC's Young Jazz Musician of the Year for 2014, Alexander Bowen, with his own composition, Messed Up Shape, ending this week's edition of Jazz Lineup. The programme is produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade, and if you'd like more information on Jazz Lineup, do go to the programme page on the Radio 3 website. And there's more jazz later tonight on Radio 3. Geoffrey Smith will be here with a reflection on one of the true legends of jazz, Ella Fitzgerald. Born in 1917, she became known as the First Lady of Song, the most popular jazz singer for more than half a century, winning 13 Grammy Awards, making records that sold more than 40 million copies. Geoffrey Smith celebrates Ella Fitzgerald's life and work at midnight tonight here on Radio 3.
Welcome to the Woodstock of the literary world.
As part of the BBC's coverage of the 2014 Hay Festival, Radio 3 presents a week of special live programmes from Wales. In Free Thinking at 10 o'clock on Wednesday evening, Rana Mitter will be joined by PJ O'Rourke. And on Friday night at 10...
The Verb is here at Hay, so let's get our flag unfurled.
Join Ian McMillan for The Verb's Cabaret of the Word,
with guests including songwriter Emmy the Great and the poet Tishani Doshi.
Radio 3 at Hay, starting with In Tune on Tuesday afternoon at 4:30.
Expect the usual In Tune A-list, people like William Dalrymple, Ruby Wax, Sebastian Fawkes and Sam Lee, and you won't be disappointed.
The BBC at Hay Festival 2014.
Well, from live words, it's time to turn to live music. You're listening to Radio 3. It's 7:30. Time for Radio 3 to go live in concert. And we're off to the Barbican in London tonight, where we find Petrarch Trelawney.
Hello, welcome to the Barbican for what is a very ambitious programme of French music from the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Between now and 10 o'clock, a two-act opera and a celebrated liturgical work. Well, right now, 120 members of the BBC Symphony Chorus are on stage. The orchestral musicians taking their places in front of them, almost ready to perform Fauré's Requiem. Then in the second half of the programme, a cast of eight soloists join the orchestra, along with the BBC singers, as we hear a rare performance of Poulenc's surrealist opera, Les Mamelles de Tiresias. It's based on a play by Apollinaire that Poulenc first saw when he was 18. The central character rails against the tyranny of men, refuses to have babies, and decides she should leave that responsibility to her husband. She grows a beard, he puts on a dress. We'll come back to the synopsis just before we hear the opera in an hour's time. Ludovic Morlot, the London-trained French conductor, leads tonight's performance, which, before the profane, starts with the sacred, Fauré's Requiem, written originally for the church where Fauré was an assistant organist, the Madeleine Church in Paris, a place famed for the quality of its music. There, in 1888, a requiem was held for a rich former parishioner, one Joseph Le Souffache. That first performance saw the singers accompanied by a small ensemble of harp, strings and a few wind players. Over the next few years, Fauré expanded the work, adding an offertorium and a liberame, and orchestrating the Requiem in 1900. People have said that my Requiem doesn't express the terror of death, Fauré said. Someone even called it death's cradle song. But that's how I view death, as a joyful delivery, a yearning for the happiness of the beyond, rather than a distressing passing on. Well, the work opens with the choir singing the introit and Kyrie. Mass voices start the offertorium before the baritone. Tonight, Jean-François Lapointe sings the hostius. We offer thee, O Lord, this sacrifice of prayer and praise. The choir sings the sanctus. Then we hear the soprano, Hélène Guillemette, in the Pia Jesu, originally sung by a boy treble. The choir return with the Agnus Dei. Then baritone, joined by choir, perform the thrilling liberame. In Paradisum, sing the BBC Symphony Chorus in conclusion. May the angels lead thee into paradise. Well, the orchestra quite set back at the moment on stage here at the Barbican because there's a big extension in ready for the Poulenc opera in part two of our concert, which will be semi-staged. Stephen Bryant, leader of the orchestra, takes his place on the platform. soloists tonight. Hélène Guillemet and Jean-François Lapointe making their way onto stage. Behind them, Ludovic Morlot to join the BBC Symphony Orchestra and the BBC Symphony Chorus in tonight's performance of Fauré's Requiem.